Welcome to Men in Charge. I'm Tony Flynn.
And I'm Kevin Decker. And today, something a little special for all of you who are tired of all of our original programming.
Yeah, you said we are sick of the new stuff. How about a clip show? When are you guys going to do a clip show?
When are you going to recycle some of your old episodes?
Just to feed through, split it up, and pretend it's a new show. Yeah. Well, listener, your prayers have been answered. And I never thought Kevin or I would ever be prayer answering.
No.
We wouldn't have that authority, but apparently we do.
We do now because this, at least, is in our control. We can't.
Yes.
We can't give you an infinite amount of catfish to eat, but we can rerun some old clips from old Red.
Yeah, but these are new clips from old shows.
New clips
old
shows. Yeah. Right. So Tony, the clip show idea here was, if I remember right, originally yours because we're returning to the space age future, 1992, of Rocket to the Future.
Rocket to the Future Part 1.
Yeah, we haven't done a new Rocket to the Future Part 1 in a while. And so we wanted to refresh the listener on what has been going on in this rich universe.
It's true because in 2 weeks, we will be broadcasting the newest chapter of Rocket to the Future Part 1. It's Chapter 6. But we can only do it if you listen to these next two not clip shows that provide a review of chapters 1 through 5 of Rocket to the Future Part 1.
You could, of course, go back and listen to the podcast versions of Rocket to the Future Part 1, chapters 1 through 5, or you can take this in convenient pill form.
It's a little faster. And Kevin and I are the most convenient pills you'll ever meet. So, Kevin, we're starting with Rocket to the Future Part 1, Chapter 1.
Right.
How about if we introduce the characters before we have a clip?
That's a good idea. So this show, within a show, within a show, concerns the adventures of the crew of the Earth Space Force rocket Vanguard and the leader, and I use that term loosely, of the rocket crew, Captain Fletcher Major, has a very dangerous mission to put down an insurrection among the natives on Mars. Who else is your favorite crew member?
Well, we have Commander Iris Train, who is the first officer, science officer, doctor, weapons officer, chief engineer, and executive officer, and she's the only woman in the history of the Earth Space Force to rise above the rank of cadet. Yeah, and she has a lot of she has to compensate a great deal for the incompetence of everyone else.
And then joining the Vanguard in their exciting lead-up to blastoff is Cadet Cindy, whose job is to cutely and perkily post and repost postings on the bulkhead. She's one of the more experienced members of the crew, in fact, I think.
We are also joined by Lieutenant Nemesis.
Nemesis!
Yeah, he says it's Nemesis, but we wrote this as Nemesis, but we have a bulky character who may well not follow his Earth Space Force oath and might indeed, in fact, be a criminal, a traitor.
Yeah, that's right.
They get in anyway. We also have, fresh from the academy, Ensign Vittorio Zinn.
Yes.
Now, here's the question. Is Vittorio Zinn an alien?
Well, he has skin and hair that are darker than normal human skin and hair. And so most of the rest of the crew thinks that he is.
But he says he's from Detroit.
Yeah.
We're also joined by Cadet Billy, who I think the Earth Space Force Academy just farmed him out to get him out of class. He was a bewilderingly disruptive influence in class.
Yeah, so just, you know, get him out of the way and put him on active duty on a rocket. And we should say also that there's an unnamed character that's very important in the story, which is a mysterious name tag that gets passed from character to character, right?
Mm-hmm. It's radioactive.
Yeah.
And whoever wears the radioactive name tag takes on strange powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first one to take on strange powers is a galactic encyclopedia salesman named Farley Stubbs.
And so in the first clip that we have for you, it is the earliest meeting between one of the rocket crew members, Cadet Cindy, at the monorail station on 12th Street and Atomic Way in Queens.
Excuse me, miss. Is that your white lab coat?
Do I look like some kind of a lady scientist?
And doesn't my uniform indicate that I'm a cadet in the Earth Space Force and that the name tag sewn above my left breast indicates that my name is Cindy? I'm surprised that you would jump to such wild conclusions about what belongs or doesn't belong to me when the evidence of your senses ought to discourage you from thinking that I am anyone other than whom I appear to be. It's true, I suppose, that I'm only a cadet, so not really deserving of anyone's sustained attention, but you really ought to have noticed my uniform. Bright blue with gold trim that glares like an atomic beacon when I stand in the full sun. Not to mention the snug fit over the lush curves of my body.
Sorry, Cadet Cindy. My name's Farley Stubbs, by the way. I guess someone was in a hurry and just forgot his lab coat on the bench.
I suppose. But you know who really looks utterly darling in her Space Force uniform? Commander Iris Train, the executive officer, science officer, weapons officer, chief engineer, and doctor on my rocket ship, the Vanguard. So sleek, so elegant, and the way she moves through the Vanguard's corridors in it, like some eternal goddess of the winds, lifting the skirts of a willow tree in the spring.
Well, my goodness, I have no idea what you just said, but I do find myself strangely stirred by it. Anyway, now I'm uncomfortably attracted to you, given the snug fit and lush curves you referred to earlier. So, to recover my composure, I'm going to move over to that bench down the platform a ways. I just need to bring along my encyclopedia samples.
Here, let me help lift that. I'm astrofit because of my Space Force training. And you look sort of like a hairless mole who's been hunched over a desk his whole life. How did you ever carry the trunk this far on your own? Sorry, that didn't sound very nice. But I liked what you said about me maybe being a lady scientist. It is 1991, after all, and I think girls should be allowed to do a lot of things that men can do. Oh, and here's your lab coat. Mind if I sit with you?
Actually, that's not my lab coat, remember? I asked you if it was yours.
I was sitting on that bench with you over there the whole time, remember? And don't you remember why you shouldn't have thought that the lab coat was mine? It's been, what, 2 minutes since I explained that? Are you feeling all right? Anyway, it's more likely your lab coat than mine. It seems to be tailored for your kind of body. You know, a bit shapeless. It's probably yours. Let's see if it has any of your identification in it.
Well, the name tag says Professor Shadowy in my...
Well, then you must be Professor Shadowy. That solves that. Nice to meet you, Professor. Well, that's my monotrain out to the rocket field. The Vanguard is taking off for Mars next week, and I'm so excited. I've never been further away than Staten Island before. Bye!
That's odd. The name tag is glowing, pulsating. But it's just a bar of metal pinned to a lab coat. It's making me feel really woozy. Maybe if I put on the lab coat, I won't be looking at the name tag anymore. That's better. But how strange. I'm losing interest in my encyclopedia sales career and developing a fanatical interest in what's happening on Mars. Also, my mind is being flooded with images of a rocket's technical schematics. What's happening to me?
Well, I hope that last scene whets your appetite for the intrigue that is to come and the strangeness that is the show. The next scene is between Captain Major and Commander Iris Train, who is briefing him on the situation on Mars. There is an insurrection of the natives and on Mars, and the Earth Space Force can't tolerate that.
That's right. And after we hear about that briefing, we're going to introduce you to two characters that we have not talked about yet, Hans and Jacques, the cosmic existentialists, who it turns out are the people who are writing what you're listening to right now. They're writing the lives of these characters. And we will hear them talk about how they want to characterize the rocket crew and also introduce a new character named Lieutenant Schickelgruber.
Yes. Hans and Jacques, well, you've probably already concluded this. They exist on a meta-narrative plane.
Iris, if you can't rub my feet, could you maybe just rub my temples, My head is killing me.
Club your temples? Well, I could try. Let me look around for some sort of blunt object.
No, rub my temples.
Sorry, Captain, I might possibly have misheard. Section 173.67, paragraph A, strictly forbids rubbing of command officers. Clubbing isn't mentioned, so it's not forbidden if you want to reconsider. It would address the source of the problem, I think.
I don't know. Something about clubbing just doesn't sound right.
Yes, sir, but I'm happy to revisit the idea if you change your mind. Now, about the insurrection of the Martian natives. What's the latest from Red Planet Intelligence?
A lot of charts and reports. I don't have the patience to go through it all in my condition. Read it over and brief me after blastoff. What is their space beef, anyway? We've civilized the Red Planet as much as anyone could reasonably expect. Are we supposed to civilize these damned Martians even more? Even harder? I'm at a loss. Maybe they just need a taste of the Vanguard's atomic ray guns from space.
Meanwhile, at Space Force headquarters...
I take amused pleasure in my metacognitive disgust at viewing and tampering with Space Force headquarters behind this one-way mirror. It is droll, no, to pull strings in alternative timelines, however imaginary? What do you think of this line for Cadet Billy? Golly, as I contemplate my own mortality on the eve of rocket blastoff, I finally confront my own inauthenticity.
I am highly disturbed by it. Let's use it. Since Cadet Billy is a little spasm of radio space fiction, shall we say that confronting his inauthenticity, a gesture of authenticity, will make him a real boy?
Let us say yes it will, knowing that no, it will not.
Ah, and what do you think of this phrase? It's spacetacular.
Let us spit into our palms and shake hands that we will never again speak of it.
And Captain Major... his drunken enclosure in his cabin, the forced lung of the superfluous man, the puny mind drowning in privilege, consciousness as nausea.
And Commander Iris Train, her name defines yet restrains her.
Yes, she will say, brute facticity is an essence troubled by its own flabby bottom.
How should I develop the character of Lieutenant Nemesis? You realize he is based upon my own experiences fighting the guerrilla war for the liberty of Algeria, n'est-ce pas?
The character is the epitome of the troubled hero. Write that Nemesis twice won the Crispus Uniform Award at the Space Force Academy. That's what the limp American intellect would call a dead giveaway.
I must say, aussi, that I appreciate the irony of your portrayal of Cadet Cindy as a nascent crypto-feminist as she comes to realize the lure of the competent female, Iris Train.
Of the next clip, well, no clip show can be without a scene in the space galley, mm-hmm. And that's where we go next. We meet Cadet Billy, who finds that it's just a little too exciting to hold a ray gun.
Oh, yeah, this is his first time.
Cadet Belly, what are you doing in the space galley? You're supposed to be strapped in for blastoff. And what are you doing with that ray gun? Put that away! You almost blew my top off!
Sorry, Cadet Cindy. I was just helping Lieutenant Nemesis cripple or shipple or something, and then he told me to take this ray gun and go to the galley and hunt for atomic space ants that had gotten into the space potatoes. Also, I have a deep-seated existential morbidity towards space vermin.
Whoa, is this a security kitchen? Why don't I hold the ray gun for a while, Cadet?
Here you go, Ensign Zinn.
Why are you talking like that?
I'm just trying to be polite, since you're an alien.
Sure, let's go with that. But stop talking slowly, it's irritating. No, wait, it rankles my antennae.
You have antennae?
If I do, will you be quiet? Cadet Cindy, would you get us some space coffee?
Right away, sir.
And then, why don't you join me over here at the corner table, where we can go over these inventory control spreadsheets?
How long until blastoff, Ensign Zinn?
Just as soon as you leave the galley and find the command deck, Billy. Then we'll rocket out of the atmosphere at 7 Gs, the most a human body can withstand unprotected.
Wow, 7 Gs? What are Gs?
They're units of fastness or speedity.
So, in the progression of our clips, we're getting close to the end now of Rocket to the Future Part 1, Chapter 1. And, of course, one of the delightful things, Tony, that you wrote into these early scripts is that the dream of the rocket blasting off is kind of infinitely deferred. We have not yet blasted off, and it doesn't seem like we're going to in the near future. And that situation has been made even worse at the end of Part 1, Chapter 1, by Lieutenant Schickelgruber finally arriving at the rocket, tapping on the outside to get the attention of the crew with a space wrench and denting one of the rocket fins right before the exhaust flames capture him.
Lieutenant Schickelgruber is—he was a character for whom the word hapless was invented.
Yes, I have gormless, but
gormless is even
good.
Better.
Yeah, those are both good.
Well, unfortunately for Lieutenant Schickelgruber, he is badly burned by the rocket exhaust as the Vanguard tries to take off, but of course it was sabotaged by Lieutenant Nemesis.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And Professor Shadowy.
That's right.
So we now move to from Chapter 1 to Chapter 2 of Rocket to the Future, Part 1. What lies ahead in the next clip, Kevin?
Well, with Lieutenant Nemesis and Farley Stubbs in the brig and with Lieutenant Schickelgruber suffering from his burns in the sick bay, Ensign Zinn has to get some crew help to unpack some crates in the hold. And the mysterious crate that they have just found is labeled Used Android. And so there's a lot of mystery and tension as they begin to break into that. What could possibly be in there?
Yeah, a crate called Used Android?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a mystery, folks.
Crewman number 4 and Ensign Zinn lift off the lid of the mysteriously unopened crate to reveal...
What do you know? Used Android. Look, it's rubbery skin made to look like human skin, but not all that convincingly. It's sun-bleached on one side of his face. And look at the hands. Most of the paint on the painted-on fingernails is worn off. Not very attractive.
Plus, it seems to have been carelessly disassembled.
Yeah, that too. So do you want to comment on the blonde pigtails wig, or should I?
You go ahead, sir.
Okay. And what's with the blonde pigtails wig? What's underneath?
Unsightly bald patches, sir.
Better put the wig back on, then.
Yes, sir. Also, there's a toggle switch behind the right ear. It's currently set to off. Should I flip it to on?
By all means, let's put this used android to some kind of use.
Oh, no!
What's the matter, crewman number 4?
Nothing. Sorry, Ensign, I thought I saw a space spider.
The Vanguard still hasn't taken off. There can't be any space spiders yet. Just flip the android's toggle switch to on. Okay, Android, talk.
Maybe he's not plugged in?
No, he just needs a minute to warm up.
My name is Phil. I am an Android. But I detect that I can't detect my torso, my arms, or my legs. Thus, the eye that is Phil the Android is just a head. And as just a head, I cannot fulfill my duties as ship's android.
Well, Phil, I'd like to say pull yourself together, but I don't have time to be that clever. Crewman number 4, connect Phil's limbs and send him up to navigation.
So one of the things that if you have been listening to the Rocket to the Future in the past, and if you have, congratulations, give yourself a medal, that we haven't talked about is a particular peccadillo that Lieutenant Nemesis has of blurting out all of his plans for things like sabotage and poisoning the anti-space vaccine and things like that. And in what we're leaving out from the clip show, Lieutenant Nemesis is attempting to get Cadet Billy on his side to let him out of the brig. And Nemesis blurts out, I have to get out of here, then blame all my so-called sabotage on your incompetence. And, of course, this is just typical for Lieutenant Nemesis, who apparently cannot keep his plans to himself.
He's diabolical, but he's very candid.
Yeah. And we leave Cadet Billy deciding not to let him and Farley Stubbs out of the brig, but instead to look for the mysterious name tag himself.
Well, next we go to the space sickbay where Lieutenant Schickelgruber is being treated for his burns, but without any anesthetic.
Yeah, yeah.
Commander Train does not want him to have any space morphine. At that point, Phil, the used android, points out that he can calculate 10 times wow. faster than any human.
That's amazing, yeah. And that's why you need an android on board your ship.
Right.
Anyway, the android should be showing up anytime.
Here's your android, Ensign. Where should I put it?
I told you to reassemble the android. Where are the legs, crewman?
Sir, there was some kind of mistake. Two left legs in the crate, no right leg. The android kept falling over, so I decided that a head, arms, and torso would have to do.
No wonder the price was discounted.
I don't miss my legs. I like being carried around.
This android isn't just lazy. He's really heavy.
I have an iron constitution.
My pain medication, such as it was, is wearing off.
Don't worry, Lieutenant. I'll call Cadet Cindy and ask her to bring you more. Then she'll have to visit me in navigation.
Astrogation. You're adding to my pain, Ensign.
Cadet Cindy, call Astrogation immediately. Cadet Cindy, call Astrogation immediately.
Crewman number 4, please pick me up off the deck and put me in a chair.
Okay, but get comfortable. I'm not moving you anywhere else for a long time.
This is Cadet Cindy.
Cindy, this is that cute ensign you can't get out of your mind. Lieutenant Schickelgruber is in real pain here. Could you bring up several dozen vials of space morphine to help him concentrate?
Dr. Commander Train said he wasn't to have any more until after blastoff. But I'm vulnerable to suggestion, and Commander Train has an alluring fire in her eye when she's vexed with me. So, okay.
So, should we lay in some coordinates, Lieutenant Schickelgruber? I'd like to look as if I know what I'm doing when Cadet Cindy gets here.
First, we have a lot of math to do. We have to calculate where Mars will be in its orbit in a month, which is when we're supposed to land. And then we need to calculate our standard velocity after blastoff.
I can calculate. I can calculate 10 times faster than a human.
That's right, Phil. You're an android. Or most of one. So you can do it in your head. Go ahead, Phil. Calculate. Amaze us. Hurry.
Okay. Where's your atomic adding and subtracting machine?
What? Aren't you a computer? Just give us the coordinates and the space-time speed ratio or whatever it is. Again, not my best subject at the Academy.
Yes, I am a computer, but my computer brain is only for talking and moving around, like the humans.
Oh, here's the atomic adding and subtracting machine. Now what?
Watch my fingers fly over the keys.
What, those jointless sausage-like things?
Wow, and golly, you're fast. What are your computational results so far?
Nothing yet. I'm just moving my fingers really fast. Give me some numbers to enter, and don't forget to check my work for errors.
And so as we get close to the end of Rocket of the Future Part 1, Chapter 2, Cadet Billy finally has a success finding the name tag that was dropped by Farley Stubbs after being Professor Shadowy with the help of the name tag. And as Billy dons it, his mind is filled with images of Martian riches and the desire to take control of the native insurrection on Mars because the name tag now reads Cadet Billy, Warlord of Mars.
And then we have a flashback because in his space gin-induced brain fog, Captain Major goes back in his mind to when he was a cadet back in 1975 on the first ship to land on Mercury. But he is introduced to space gin through old Shep, the cook, and everything goes horribly wrong.
Unaccountably, we now go back to 1975 as the Earth Space Force rocket Shin Guard lands on Mercury's narrow, vaguely temperate region between the frozen side that never faces the sun and the burning side that always faces the sun. We now join young Cadet Fletcher in the galley with the space cook, Old Shep.
Come on, kid. Try a little space gin. On the house.
I'd better not, old Shep. Space milk will be just fine for me.
Okay, cadet, but let's compromise. How about I pour a little space gin into your space milk?
I guess that would be okay.
Well, that was fast. I guess I should have waited till he was off duty. I hope he wasn't in the middle of anything important. I'd better not be blamed for this. I'm only peddling space gin for pocket change. And since he's just slumped over onto the deck, I might as well go through his pockets.
Cadet Fletcher to communications. Cadet Fletcher to communications. Contact Mercurian authorities to announce the Shin Guard's landing.
This is Cadet Fletcher. On my way.
Okay, Cadet, I'll carry you part of the way out of the galley. But the rest of the way, you're on your own. Okay, kid. Communications. Go. Off with you.
So, as we proceed into Rocket of the Future, Part 1, Chapter 3, we're introduced to some new adversaries, the evil Rocket Men from Planet B, which I think, Tony, was one of our progressive messages. They're all played by women, so they're
That's
Rocket
true.
Men played
we're
by
very
women.
Progressive.
It's pretty amazing
yeah.
That we did that. And the Rocket Men are intent on sabotaging the Earth Space Force Rocket Vanguard and eventually conquering Earth. So we get an eye on their plans. And we're introduced to yet another new character because, of course, we can't stop introducing them, a young Cockney street urchin named Pip, who has stowed away on board the Vanguard and is discovered by crewman number 4 when she pops open another crate.
Yeah, and since Pip is a stowaway, he had to be British. There's no other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he will prove pivotal in many of the upcoming chapters.
And I think also from being a street urchin to now a space urchin, he may eventually become a sea urchin. We'll see. I don't know.
Spiky.
Yeah, a water planet we need.
Yeah.
So in our last clip for today's Clip Show, we are hoping that the Rocket Vanguard is about to take off. That's certainly what Ensign Zinn and Lieutenant Schickelgruber think in this last clip. But in fact, it's far worse than that. The rocket has been dislocated through space by a ray of pure Bertold radiation.
Holy spaceballs!
That certainly was not an elegant blastoff, Ensign. Help me off the deck.
I think I broke my collarbone.
That was no blastoff at all. We've been dislocated in space by a ray of pure Bertold radiation.
But that kind of electric technology is far beyond the capacities of Earthmen.
What's going on? Did we blast off?
Hi, Cadet Cindy. Everything's under control. But if you're afraid, come over here and sit on my lap.
Where are we in space and time?
Well, Kevin, if we were to thank our cast, though we don't like doing so, whom would we thank?
Well, we would thank people such as Terry McMullen, Ryan Weldon, Cindy Nover, Nancy Roth, Nisha Schramm, Susan Creed, Kevin Decker, Tony Flynn, Kendall Feeney, and Mimi Marinucci.
And we'd also like to thank the three people who, if you count them, it always ends up being three. Kerry Boyce, Vern Windham, and the only man who attends his orphanage reunion, Brian Lindsay.
That's good.